Hi, this is Rich Scheidner. If you've ever wondered what it was like to be a stand-up comedian in the 1980s, I'm going to do you a big favor. Instead of billions of dollars for a time machine, you can just spend $24.95 and buy my new book, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s Comedy Boom. It will save you money and give you thrills. It will take you there. Go to my website, richscheidner.com. Go to amazon.com and buy this book.
Hi, everybody. I'm Rolanda Watts. Some of you may know me as a news reporter, an anchor woman. Some of you may know me as a talk show host, an actor, voice artist. But now I am also an author of Destiny Lingers, my very first novel endorsed by Dr. Maya Angelou. And I'm so happy to be talking with Mr. Media today.
I'm Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You can see, hear, and read more than 1,000 of my previous celebrity interviews at MrMedia.com. That's MrMedia.com. Subscribe to the show on YouTube, iTunes, Apple News, Google Play, or Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook or Twitter. On today's show, I'll talk to former syndicated TV talk show host Rolanda Watts. She recently veered into a new corner of media, writing her first romance novel, Destiny Lingers. Stick around. If you're in the public eye, folks love to read deeper meaning or intent into everything you do or say. That's why I'm betting that Rolanda Watts never seriously considered writing a romance novel during the years she was best known as the host of the Emmy Award-nominated syndicated daytime TV talk show, cleverly dubbed Rolanda. Her millions of viewers might have looked at her a little differently if she wrote the following paragraph back then. Garrett gently kisses me on my forehead, my eyelids, my temples, my cheeks. He caresses my hair and begins to press his strong, hard body against mine. He becomes aroused, his muscular thigh rubbing in between mine. Well, you know, first of all, they'd wonder, why does Garrett only have one muscular thigh? What's wrong with the other one? Or is he an amputee? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's probably a genre of his own. Okay, but I digress. He dives his hot tongue into my mouth, and I'm so hungry for his kiss that I nearly swallow it. So, you get the idea, right? That would likely become a little distracting from the day's talk show topic, whether it's Where Are All the Good Black Men, or I've Been Stood Up 26 Times, or Beauty in the Breasts. Actually, the more I think about it, maybe a romance novel would have been a perfect companion for the show. Rolanda on TV was fearless and funny, silly, and a bit sassy at times. With Destiny Lingers, Rolanda Watts takes all that personality once squeezed into the tube and lets her love flow across 255 pages of fiction. How much of it is romantic fiction and how much is real life? We'll find out next on Rolanda. Rolanda Watts, welcome to Mr. Media.
That is one of the best introductions I think I've ever had in my life.
Really?
You know, it makes me wonder, had I written this 20 years ago, maybe my show would still be on the air.
Oh, God. All right.
It was a little steamy there.
But it was a little steamy there. And I stopped. I stopped short, as has been said. I looked at reading a little further, and I thought, you know, I think that may be as far as I can go here.
I know, you know what's so funny is when I go to my book readings across the country because I'm on book tour, they're like, read the sex scenes. I'm like, there is no way I'm going to sit here and read these to you. But I am going to be working on the audio, so you never know.
So you're going to do an audio book?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, awesome. I think that's great.
You know why? Because I had so many of my blind friends who came to my book signings and said, when are you going to work on that audio? And so it's been in my brain. That's my gift. I've got to do that.
Well, listen, you have the voice. I mean, you have the face for TV, but you have the voice for the audiobook too. So why not do it? Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love listening to audiobooks. You know, not a lot of people want to sit and take the time to read. I understand that. But I think that when you're stuck in traffic or you're on that treadmill, there's nothing like a good story in your ear.
Well, and you know, it's funny. I guess the guilty pleasure of this show has been that I've interviewed a lot of romance novel writers. And some of them I know personally. One is an Associated Press reporter who is a very serious reporter, and then at night goes home and writes these steamy erotic novels. One is an employment law expert, a lawyer here in town, who, again, you look at her and you go, really? And then you pick up the book and you go, oh, my God. It's interesting. I mean, would you have ever thought that it would be appropriate in the mid-90s when you were doing the show to do a romance novel?
You know what? I just didn't have time. It was always a hobby for me. You know, writing has been a hobby for me since I was a little girl. Hmm. And a lot of times during my talk show, actually, let me tell you, during my talk show in 1996, Hurricane Bertha slammed Topsail Island, where this story takes place, and also New York City, but Topsail Island. And I survived a hurricane. I had a house there on the ocean. Dumb me wanted to stay there and cover the story for Inside Edition. By the time the truck got to the island, it was too dangerous to let the truck on and too dangerous for me to get off. Wow. So I was one of 11 stubborn stragglers left on the island. This is what actually started the story. So when people would bring a book to read to the beach, I had this story in my head I wanted to tell. So I would bring a book to write, and I just did it for fun. And I would read a chapter after we'd spent the day on the beach. And after a while, my friends were like, well, what's going to happen? And then I workshopped it, and I went to UCLA, and I took some classes in writing. And I was so busy with this story I had to tell. And Dr. Maya Angelou, who I had known growing up, read the manuscript. And she said, don't you die with this story still in you. This is an important story to tell. And when the master tells you that, you know, that was meant a lot to me. So, yes. And I think that what's really interesting, Bob, is that it has transferred. It took a long time to write it because, like I said, it was a hobby. And then I started taking it very seriously. But it came out at the right time when we're talking about race issues and class issues, along with some steamy romance, always help. But these are the issues that we're talking about. So it's more than just chick lit and romance and all that. Not that there's anything wrong with all of that. But this story has a bit of gravitas that's taking some folks by storm right now. Yeah.
So is this the first book that you've written, or is there other stuff in a shelf somewhere? Or
this is the first one. Yeah. But I'm working on a sequel.
Okay.
That was the thing Dr. Maya Angelou said when she handed me the manuscript. She says, I'm very angry with you. And I said, why? I'm like, did I split a verb? What did I do? And she's like, you finished it. She said, I want this story to continue, Ms. Watts. And so I have no choice but to continue it. But it's also a story where you get so entrenched with Chase and Destiny and all the other characters, you kind of want to know what's going to happen. And I would like to go back and delve a little more deeply into these isms of these mothers and some of the history of the island, which, you know, there's some truth and then there's fiction, but there's a lot of the truth of the island I would like to tell because that's my family history as well.
Now, was Dr. Angelou, was she in the book before she read it? Because she is mentioned in the book.
Yeah, she is mentioned in the book, and that is true. During my first marriage, she did give us a beautiful silver tray and sat with us to make sure we would be good husbands and wives, and that didn't work out so well, but still, she was there. But, yes, she was mentioned in the book, absolutely, but her endorsement was the main thing, one of her final endorsements before she passed. Hmm.
And so I got to ask, so how do you and your family, how did you know her?
Well, I knew her for about 35 years from being a very young woman, and I know her because she was a dear friend of my parents, my mother and father. When Dr. Maya Angelou moved to work at Wake Forest University, that's where my mother was also there as an associate dean of the med school. So they worked together and became very dear friends. My father also in the education system at Winston-Salem State University, chairman of the arts department, very big in the arts community. It was a natural blend. And we spent, you know, Thanksgivings and Easters and her birthday and Christmases and all of those wonderful holidays with her. And she's still here.
Yeah.
Still here.
No, that's very nice. And so you're talking about your parents, so you've kind of answered what I officially was going to ask you to start was how much real life are we seeing in the book and how much is fiction? It seems like there's quite a bit of actual Rolanda Watts story.
Yeah, there. You know what? It is. while we're marketing it as a romance novel, it really is a creative nonfiction. In other words, there's a lot of basis for truth. And then because of the beautiful literary license that we have, we can take and elaborate on that. It's a relatively new genre, if you will. And I found it exciting because I got to tell some of my news stories. The negotiating a hostage situation that Destiny gets in. Well, that was a truth for me. Back in the 80s, it's crazy to believe it, but people would be in trauma and actually say, I want a news reporter to talk to. And they would send somebody.
Right.
And so I was actually up in this Harlem tenement doing that. If my story had ended the way Destiny's story had ended, I would have 10 Emmys by now, Bob. There's some creative license that goes with that. But those are real. I think a lot of the emotions that Destiny goes through are real, is what I went through as a young woman who was trying to make my career in news and still trying to be married at 22, which was ridiculous, and was paying more attention to my career than my actual marriage. Things happen. Mm-hmm. There's some things that the mother and father, that's a total elaboration of things. They're little bits and pieces, but the father is not anywhere near like my dad. In fact, that's my girlfriend's father.
Oh.
The doctor. That's her father in the book. But you pick and choose from things. I do remember the hurt and pain of finding betrayal and deceit in my life and trying to figure out what the next step would be. Aunt Joy, who so many people love in the book, Destiny's aunt, that was really based on my Aunt Flo, that very much her. So Garrett, as hard, he's somebody you love to hate. What a creep this guy is that she's married to.
Yeah.
My husband was nowhere near that bad. Let me just say. He might have hurt my feelings, but he was no Garrett.
Okay.
He was not that bad. Chase is totally made up. And everybody is in love. Chase.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I made up the man I want to marry then. He's wonderful. And so many people, so many women and guys, there's some guys out there who are saying, if I had to meet somebody on a beach, I want it to be Chase.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So, so you gave me a lot there to think about. Has there been, so your first husband was not the evil dude that, Garrett, Destiny's husband in the book is?
And no, he wasn't that bad. He's a very bright, intelligent man. We just got married too early.
Okay.
And, you know, and there were some issues. Don't get me wrong. There are issues in any time people get married at 22.
Sure.
But I think I was more running away from home. And quite honestly, I believe that a lot of my young readers are saying, these are issues we really have to think about. You know, how much do we put into it? Can you have it all? I mean, can you have a big career as a news reporter and still be a new bride and be all of that for your husband, too? And what happens when you're a young man and you're not getting your needs fulfilled? And what happens when a girlfriend betrays you? I mean, these are real conversations and real life issues that happen. And yeah, maybe I did draw a little bit from those juicy stories from my talk show.
Uh-huh. So that more likely, I mean, I was going to ask, I mean, have you been cheated on in a marriage over the years?
I've been cheated on with and without marriage.
Ah, sorry.
Listen, if Brad and Angelina and Halle Berry and Blake and all of these gorgeous people have issues, you don't think people like us have issues? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I was kind of hoping the answer to that was going to be no, but I'm...
I know. I wish it was.
You know, it's like until I kind of reached the last 10 years, I never really thought. I thought, you know, I write. I actually make my living as a writer, and I always thought I'd love to write fiction. I've made a living writing nonfiction. I'd love to write fiction, but up until the last 10 years, I just didn't feel that I knew enough or had experienced enough to put it to write it in a way that, you know, it actually showed a little depth. Is that some part of why you're doing it now? I mean, you know, you've been around this. God help me, I don't mean this the way this is going to sound, but we've both been around the block a little bit at this point, right?
So I've been around a few blocks.
Okay, all right.
In New York City alone.
All right.
How many blocks? My mother was afraid of that. My mother was afraid I would have a job working the streets.
Oh, no, 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 no.
As a street reporter, you know, let me clarify that for those of you who don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that may not sound right to just everybody. But, I mean, do you think you had to reach a point? If you had, let's say 20 years ago, if you had had the time while you were doing the TV show, do you think that you had had the experience to write something like this? Or did it really take some time, you know, to kind of bubble?
It took a lot. That's a great question, Bob. It took a lot of maturity and a lot of involvement for me as a human being and as a woman. And it also took getting on the other side of pain, betrayal, deceit, those feelings that we carry with us sometimes. This was a very healing book for me to be able to write these types of things. This is, you know, I've had a lot of reviewers who have said that this is more than a story of just love. It's a story of self-discovery of a young woman. You know, destiny is very different than me. And there were times when I was writing this novel and I'd be like, girl, come on, get your bootstraps on and let's put on your big girl pants and get out there. And she, no, I just need to wallow just a little bit more. You know, at this stage in the story, she's facing the biggest trauma of her young life. She's only in her early 20s. She gets married. She's got this big career and uncovers this long strand of red hair on her husband's bed pillow, and the only person she knows with red hair is her best friend. This can't be happening. And there are people who say, well, why didn't she immediately go in there and go, you are your-? Because that's not what we do. It's not what we do. We can't believe that's going to happen, if that's true. And we deny. By the time you recognize there's an affair going on, you've known for a long time, honey. You can put the pieces together and put the crumbs back together and make a whole loaf of bread. That's how much you know.
Right.
But we're in denial. And so we go with destiny through this whole series of denial until she gets to the other end of that. I was very angry when I wrote the first draft. I was beating up everybody. Everybody was a horrible person. And I was like, it's not fair to work out your stuff in a novel on people. So I would go back and rework the chapters and rework the conversations and rework the backstories. So yeah, it was a lot because it wasn't time for that story to come out yet. And to be honest with you, who knew that when the book was released this year, that so much talk would be going on about race relations and class relations. You know, one of my favorite lines in the book is when Destiny says, remembering Chase as a boy, the boy she was forbidden to love because of Jim Crow laws. She goes, he couldn't love me because I was black, but I couldn't love him because he was poor. And these are real issues. And love endures. And that phrase, time moves on, but destiny lingers, and love endures all, even time and hatred. That's the story I wanted to tell. And I'm glad that the spirits and the planets weren't aligned until it was a gentle way to tell them. What is also coming out of this, and I believe this is the spirit of Dr. Maya Angelou all over this, Bob, is my Auntie Maya, as I called her, was very much into, you know, humane issues and civil rights and lifting your voice for love. And I believe what I'm hearing is a thank you that the book deals with these issues, but not in an angry way. It's all through the search of love. These two young people who are trying to fight the isms of their parents, because Destiny's mama is the biggest snob, bougie. She don't even like black people.
Right.
And then Chase's mom cannot stand black people. And so how did this happen? And these two lovers get a second chance at first love. You know, I just thought there were so many things embroiled in this. And then the hurricane comes in. So I wanted to also show the beauty and ugliness of human nature, as well as the beauty and ugliness of Mother Nature. And putting all of that together to see what comes out of the Meshuggah is... what the story's about. You know?
Got to slip in that Yiddish somewhere.
Got to get a little Yiddish in there.
A little bit. So we should explain, I think, that there's three main characters here. there's Destiny, who is sort of a little bit you. There is Garrett, her husband. They're a young married couple. They do not seem to be getting along, and Destiny is trying to ignore what's right under her nose for as long as she can until she sees it for herself. And then there is Chip, now known as Chase, who when Destiny and Chip were growing up, we haven't really explained this. I guess Destiny is African American. Chip is a Southern cracker, if you will. Sorry to offend, but so they grow up, and the thing is that Destiny's parents are upper class. They're well-to-do. They have money. When she gets married, eventually they throw this massive wedding, 1,000 people. I was like, 1,000 people? That's insane. Anyway, Dr. Maya Angelou sends a gift. So but when she has evidence of her husband's betrayal that she just simply can no longer ignore, it starts to open up things with her and opportunity with Chase. So it becomes an interracial story. It becomes a class story. And I don't want to give much more than that away, but that's what we're talking about here, right? I just went on a long time.
That's right.
Okay.
It's just that simple. Two kids who were forbidden to be with each other because of Jim Crow laws and because of class issues. Time moves on and destiny lingers. Now there are no more Jim Crow laws. You're grown people. What are you going to do? And they're both in the midst of their own relationship issues that both of their lives are crazy. You know, the storms at sea can't match the storms of life. Mm-hmm. But yet they're caught and embroiled in both. It's a great story.
You like it, do you?
I like it. But it's fun, and it was fun to write because one thing leading to the other thing, and and now I have a journalist and a cop. Who knows where the story could go?
Well, what I'm wondering is, were you ever, when you were doing the TV show 20 years ago? I'm sure there are certain things that you try to stay out of trouble. You want to you want attention for the show, but you don't necessarily want to bring attention to yourself or your personal life. When you sit down to write a book like this, though, you've got to kind of expose your interior narrator, if you will. You start talking about things sexual. You start talking about the physicality of things. And were you ever nervous about exposing that and having your friends and your family and whatever read your
No. You can't write like that. You can't write and be concerned about what people are going to say. I could care less what people have to say because it's my story.
Right.
And I believe that you have to go there. I think I learned that as an actor, that you just can't be shallow and surface if you really want to make a point emotionally and touch people with your art and your craft. You have to go there. And they didn't have. And I'm sorry, but when the lovers are together and they're – I mean, and they've been waiting to be together. All of the lovers were waiting to be together.
Yeah.
When they get together, it ain't just holding hands. I mean, these are grown-ass people who are lusting. And right. I just happen to stick my – that scene in Boston, which I'm not going to give everything away, but let me tell you this. This scene comes after the revelation that there is something going on, uh-huh. and Destiny has to come to for and face her other friends. This is like Sex and the City, and one of the other girls did Mr. Big. Right. That's just so wrong, okay? So they come to the realization that one of the girlfriends out of this foursome has been messing around with Destiny's husband, okay? And what are we going to do? And at that point, as a writer, I didn't know what to do. I was crying. The girls are crying. We're all like in this moment. And then I stop and I didn't know where to go with the story. And so one of the meeker characters goes, well, now what are we going to do? And I didn't know what to do. And then all of a sudden that sassy cat character steps up and goes, get dressed to kill, ladies. We're going to Boston.
Right.
I've never been to Boston in my life, Bob.
Really?
Never. I have no idea what's about to happen. But what happened up in that Ritz-Carlton, I followed the characters. What will happen a lot of times when you're writing is characters, once you give them flesh and bones and little ticks and blonde hair and a little this and a little that and the way the car they drive, they become real. I know that sounds crazy. I had a lady one time at a book signing. She said, You know, I got everything you were talking about as a writer, but when you got to the part about the characters talking to you, you lost me. But it happens. You start to hear dialogue. They tell you what they're going to do. They tell you their names. This cat took me through that whole scene, which turns out to be one of the most pivotal. That is an awesome scene, if I can say myself. It was fun to write because I didn't know what was going to happen next. And everything was there. It was like a movie in my head that these characters were taking me through. And it couldn't be gentle. It had to be so blatant, in your face, kind of raw. Here it is, because destiny is in denial. All right. Sometimes we've got to see it for ourselves. Okay. Here it is.
Oh, here it is indeed.
Now that I wanted to do in real life. I wanted to catch the guy who cheated on me and catch him with the, you know, the whole that. So a lot of that was dreaming of what I wanted reality to be. You know?
By the way, I think you just gave yourself a future title for a sequel.
What?
Destiny in Denial.
Destiny in Denial. Well, she sure was in denial.
Yeah.
That's something the book clubs, and what's so exciting is after you write a book to go to the book clubs, people who really love books like you and I do and love storytelling, to go and they are so angry with destiny at the beginning. They're like, but then they go like, yeah, but I remember I did the same thing. And it's like, oh, are you mad at yourself because you see yourself? So many people, I think that's the joy of reading any book, is that you find a piece of yourself in it. Mm-hmm. That you find your neighbor, you find people you want to connect with, you find people you never want to see again. But that's the beauty of it, that you learn so much about yourself, I think, because this is raising a lot of questions. I've had young white men come to me, Bob, and say, thank you for telling our story. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, you know, every time people look at white men in this country, they think we're automatically rich. And they don't tell our story that I grew up in a trailer park with a single mom. We were on welfare. And I have no isms. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? There aren't any stories like that. I don't know of any stories where we talk about the young boy who's making his way up to be somebody in America who came out of a trailer park. I don't hear too many of those. Matthew McConaughey, who I would love to play Chase, by the way, 20 years ago. But he's doing that movie now about, you know, the Civil War guy. But that's an American song. Mm-hmm. And then we don't see many stories of wealthy black families either, much less the two come together. So it's an interesting dialogue, and it's another American song, and a song of a changing America and a changing time and a changing island, Topsail Island, my little island.
I got a little frustrated with Destiny twice, actually, in the book. I thought it took her too long to finally accept that Garrett was cheating until she actually saw it with her own eyes. And then at the same point, when she's actually seeing it with her own eyes, I got a little frustrated because I'm like, how long are you going to watch? I mean, it becomes it sort of became an act of voyeurism at some point. And I don't want to give away what was going on because it'll spoil it, because it's fun to, you know, it's fun to suffer with her because she's truly suffering. But I'm like, jump, go, let them know you're there.
Right.
Get them before.
But that's where the writer plays a game. That's when the writer has fun, just because you know. But that's what we would all, trust me, I would have been long. I'm a totally different woman. I've been, you know.
Yeah, right.
But I think that's what it was, that I wanted you as the reader to go through. I wanted you to go through the sweaty palms and the panting and the can't move because somebody may catch me and all of that. And, you know, if I had gone, okay, bada bing, bada boom, bada bomb, it wouldn't have been that good a story.
True.
You had to kind of weave the yarn a little bit, weave the yarn, and getting you to want to find out what's going to happen, you know?
Well, so what was the easiest part of writing your first book, and what was the toughest part?
Let's see. The easiest part was to tell the love story. I always felt these two so much in love. I've always seen the story as a movie. It's always been a movie in my head. And I want it to be a movie or a television series. But the toughest thing was when the excitement wasn't happening. How do you get from point A to point B? You know, there, like after I finished the draft, I would go back and read through and I would say, oh, this is where I got bored. Okay, this is, I got to rework it. So how do you make it exciting? How do you make it? How do you take a romance and not make it sappy when romance is sappy? You know, that's the way people talk when they're in love. That's what people do when they're in love. But to us, they're not in love right at the moment. You're like, ugh. You know, you don't want it to get like, you know. And how do you make it important? Mm-hmm. How do you tell this story and let it just not be, oh, a nice little romance story? How do you make it have gravitas? What is the story you're trying to say that's going to touch humanity and move people in a way other than, oh, yeah, I just read a book at the beach, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think those were the tough things. And also finding – what was exciting also was finding new ways to say words. I found at one point I said big 50 million times. It's like there are many other ways to say the word big. So just tweaking in that and letting it go, because I'm a perfectionist. So I wanted to – Yeah, never wanted to let it go.
I hear that huge is a big word these days for big.
Huge.
It's going to be huge.
Gigantic.
Yes.
Colossal. Rotund.
And you mentioned earlier when we first started talking that you had taken some classes or some programs at UCLA.
Yeah. You know something, when I wanted to go to college growing up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, I always wanted to go to UCLA, maybe because it was the furthest place from home. And my parents were like, no way you're going that far. So I ended up going to Spelman College and then Columbia. But I always said, you know, I don't think it's ever too late to have a happy childhood. I don't think it's ever too late to make your dreams come true. So I said, I'm going to UCLA just so I could walk across the campus and pretend like I'm here. And I really was. So I took memoir writing. I took creative nonfiction course, which is when I discovered, oh, so I can add my real stuff and elaborate. Well, great, you know. And I took a poetry class. I took lots of writing classes. I believe in doing the work, Bob. I'm old school. And I tell the young folks who follow me all the time, I say, you know, I know it's easy to look at The Voice and Dancing with the Stars and be an immediate star, but that's not really the way things always work. And I believe if you're going to be a voice artist, go take a workshop. If you're going to be a writer, go take a class. If you're going to be an artist, take a painting course. Because I think education, I'm big on taking education and classes and stuff, but that's what really makes the difference between a hobby and a real craft and then a career, an actual career. So take it seriously. Those of you who are writers who have that story in you, take it seriously. Get thee to a classroom, because it also gives you the discipline that you need to.
Okay. Now, I'm guessing you're in the room where you did most of the writing?
No, this is actually my living room.
Ah, okay.
Right in here. I have an office in there that I write in. I also love writing at the beach. I wrote, you know, Topsail Island is a very important story for me. Back in 1949, my grandparents, along with 9 other black families, this was during the heat of the Jim Crow era, established Ocean City on Topsail Island, North Carolina, which was the first black beachfront community in the state. And so that was a big deal. And as integrated as that was supposed to make the island, it was still very segregated. The whites lived on one side, the blacks on the other side. And the poor whites set up a trailer park near our neighborhood, but yet the kids were forbidden to play with each other. So growing up there all of my life, where I couldn't even bring my white friends to the beach house with me because they were afraid of what might happen. Mm. What would happen if these kids were called in-lovers? What would happen if the KKK, which was rampant down there in eastern North Carolina? I mean, I can remember seeing billboards that say, this is Klan country, like it or leave it. So we're talking about you could die loving somebody from across the tracks. And so that started going through my brain. We lost a house to a hurricane in 54. I lived through a hurricane. One thing that brings people together is the dark. When you're in the dark, everybody's the same color. And people pull together and build together an island. So all of these dichotomies of human nature and real nature was fascinating to me. And it came out in the story.
It's funny.
Because nature and classism, racism are as big a characters as Destiny, Chase, and Garrett.
Right. I was just saying, it's funny that as we're talking and we're recording this, Hurricane Matthew is bearing down on the eastern seaboard. And you might want to get the topsail in the next couple of days to ride out another hurricane. I'm sure that's really something you really want to do, right?
Let me tell you something. When they say evacuate, Bob, evacuate. It was crazy. But that's where the police chief character came from, because when the storm was over, we had to eat at the 11 of us stuck on this island, couldn't leave our houses without police escort that would take us to the Red Cross where we would eat for 3 days. And the police chief and I would look out the window and talk about, oh my God, that used to be where da, 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 all these beautiful memories we had of this island we loved. And I said, well, why don't we know each other? And then, boom, the reality hit us slap dab in the face. Jim Crow. We could have never grown up together. And we thought, what a lifetime, what a cheat of a good friendship.
Right.
And so we started talking about, wouldn't it be something if we'd known each other and we couldn't play with each other, and then I came back and then we met again. And he was the first one that said, write that novel. You need to write a book. Write the novel. And we're still friends to this day, and he's proud as a pumpkin.
Very nice.
Down in North Carolina. Very you know, nice. With his book out now.
Well, so we've talked about the book. I got to talk to you a little bit about the TV show.
Okay.
First of all, do you miss it?
You know, there are times I really, really do miss it. And I really miss that genre of television. I mean, we were going into to maximum state prisons, talking to mothers behind bars. We were getting kids out of gangs. We were saving young children from suicide, talking about the gay issues. We covered O.J. Simpson, the only show with a reporter in the news, in the courtroom. We did good stuff. We had a great show. And I do miss that very, very much. And I miss the being able to connect with America and the world in a way of telling stories through other people and my own lives. I just thought it was a wonderful way to connect humanity. Hmm. When the era changed with Jerry Springer, even though our ratings were good, we decided we just can't do this. I can't do that kind of stuff. So that's when I decided, you know, of all the things I do, the bottom line is the thread that runs through it is storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I believe that our stories are the most important things we have in life, Bob. At the end of the day, nobody's going to know nothing about us except the story they tell about us. So what story will you tell? What story will you be with your life? And I don't believe you should disrespect people because of their stories. Mm. And so that was the genre that was taken over, and we just decided not to continue. But, you know, there'll be another opportunity, and it'll be so much better then. I think that was just God's little tease, because at this time in my life, I'm so much wiser, mm-hmm. and so much, I mean, I'm a grown woman now, and I think I have a lot to teach and a lot to share and a lot of resources to bring together. So I think that when the time is right, there's no question it'll happen.
Well, I should tell people that there's a Rolanda archive on YouTube. You have a YouTube channel, and that there's a number of episodes there. And thumbing through there, I found one that was particularly interesting to me, and that was the hour that you had Bill Cosby on your show.
Yeah. Now, you know something, Bill Cosby. Don't say Bill Cosby doesn't apologize, because he came on my show to apologize. Do you know why he came on my show, Bob?
No, tell me.
He came on to apologize to his brother, because his brother couldn't read. And if you remember all of those little Fat Albert, and he was always, Russell was always, he always thought him stupid and all that.
Right.
He called him stupid all his life. And Russell didn't learn to read until he was 55 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent of literacy, but 1 out of 5 Americans can't read. I think that's crazy. But they helped me tell that story, that even Bill Cosby's brother couldn't read till 55, and he learned to read, and that was when he came on the show. I've known Bill Cosby for so many years and knew him before that. I have been in the room alone late at night drinking cognac and smoking cigars with Bill, and never have I seen any form of disrespect at all. That doesn't mean that I'm giving him a free pass here, because it's just the evidence is looming. But my experience with him has been nothing but stellar. That's all I can say. And he gave me a good show. Oh. But you can go back on the show and see that show. That was a good one. And yeah. Also, let me tell you, I put all my O.J. I even have more I'm going to put up. O.J. Simpson, when we covered it, it's like it happened yesterday. All the same issues we're dealing with today. And then when that movie came out,
right.
which was superb, and they just got that Emmy. You know, more people went back to YouTube who probably weren't even born back then and started watching the show all over again. So yeah, there's some great shows there, and they're evergreen. There's always somebody cheating. There's always somebody wanting to talk about their crazy kids, or you know, or some important issues as well, like domestic violence and all of that. So go and just go through and just have a field day.
So you have the rights to all of your shows?
I was one of the owners of one of my shows.
Oh, excellent. So there will be more stuff posted, I guess.
Yeah, there's plenty of it there.
Just, oh, that's cool.
Just won't make money on it, but I do it to share with everybody else.
That's very nice. So I must – just one more thing about Cosby. I mean, for people who knew him over the years and never saw this side of him that's come out in all the press, it's just got to be – I mean, it's got to be somewhat crushing – to see someone that you've known and, you know, you've enjoyed. And even the show you did with him, it seemed clear you had a rapport with him. But I kept thinking, you know, that's 20 years ago. There wasn't all this stories now. But it just has to hurt to see.
Yeah, it's devastating. I did a show that you could watch on YouTube also. It's When Our Heroes Fall, especially in the black community. And what that means, when our heroes fall. Bill Cosby, it doesn't get better than that, bigger than that. I mean, he was like the Jell-O pudding guy. He was the guy. But, you know, this is also, I'm not, certainly not giving him a pass. And I'm saying that because, like I said, I think there are a couple of little liars that went up in there, a couple of little skeezers up in there who were like trying to get their little gold digging. But for the most part, when you have that much smoke, there's got to be a little fire somewhere. And I'm very sad to hear that. I'm just so sad to hear that. But, you know, it's also the question I ask Bob is, Bill, who the hell did you piss off? I mean, who did you piss off? Because they came after him. And here's a guy who was just about to sign up to – he wanted to buy one of the big networks. Hmm. Here was a guy who was about to come out with another major show. You know, this is a business where we eat our young.
Yeah.
Let's don't forget that. So there's a little bit more to this story. As a journalist, I can't help but say that. I'm seeing smoke from a whole bunch of different directions. I think there's a whole bunch of fires around. But this big one with all these women, scores of them, is so distracting, you're not going to find out about these other fires.
No.
Because they just go out of control.
Not for a
so
while,
I think there's
anyway.
Probably more to this story than somebody's helping these women come out.
All right. Well, let's come back to Rolanda, the writer, as we wrap this up. So the first book, Destiny Lingers, and I was not surprised to hear you say that you're looking at sequels. I had a couple of suggestions. I mentioned one before. You said Destiny in Denial. I also wanted to suggest Destiny Cheats, Destiny Staggers, Destiny Ponders. I'm just thinking Destiny could go on pretty much forever.
Well, you know something? I want to see Destiny grow up in the next book. Because she's learned a lot in this first. I want to know what's going to happen with her and her relationships. I want to know why those mothers became the women that they became. Mm-hmm. And will they change in the coming chapters? You know. And my question is, will Destiny and Chase be able to really make it? Are our race and class issues so toxic that we can't get over them? Or do we get over them? Being in an interracial couple cannot be easy, particularly today.
Yeah.
So these are the issues I'd like to examine. And you know what? I also found out, Bob, when we were making the cover for the book, the publishing house, iUniverse, had no pictures of interracial lovers.
Hmm.
And they said, you know what? We're not telling this story. And I said, well, come on, let's tell it. We had to take a graphic of two people sleeping and put the heads together, which is a beautiful, I love my cover.
Mm-hmm.
But this was something that we had to make on our own because these stories aren't being told. Interracial is now a new genre of reading. It's crazy, but this is the world we live in now. And time has moved on and some destiny is still lingering. I've had gay couples come to me and say, this is our story.
Hmm.
You know? And I also have many people, especially when I was down doing book signings in the South, like down there in Florida on that beach you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
I was very excited and hesitant to find out what the reaction would be. And to be honest with you, overwhelmingly it has been, thank you for telling this story and not being mad at anybody while you told it.
Ah, that's nice.
That don't beat us over the head. Don't beat anybody over the head. Just tell the story And, you know, and you tell the story and people tell their own through it. You know, that's what I wanted to do. Get out the way.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Rolanda Watt's first novel, Destiny Lingers, in great stores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. You know, if you watch the show, you know how this works. Below the video, to the left or to the right, you'll see the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. You can download it as an ebook immediately, or you can have it delivered to you, the physical paperback, I don't know, maybe a day, maybe in an hour, depending on where you live, how close you live to Amazon. So go ahead and click on the cover, order the book. I think you'll enjoy it. I enjoyed it. Get a little steamy in your life there, you know.
Everybody needs it.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody. And is there
the biggest sex organ we have, our brain. Let your imagination go wild.
Now, I mentioned that you have the YouTube channel. Is there a website you want people to?
Yeah. You can go to the Rolanda Watts YouTube channel, or I think it's called Rolanda Watts channel, actually, and go over there. There's all kinds of stuff. And then you can also follow me at Rolanda Watts, and that's R-O-L-O-N-D-A, at Rolanda Watts on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and then Rolanda.com. You can go over there and find out when I may be coming to you. I'm going to be in Miami the week of the 15th. On November 18th, I'm going to be in Miami at the book Fair, the Miami Book Fair International, signing books.
That's a big one.
Book, get it signed. And, you know, we're going to be doing something special for the holidays also. We're doing a giveaway on Goodreads that you can go and catch up with. I'm going to be offering you an opportunity to get some real goodies from me, maybe a sign, some signed books as the holidays come up. You can't beat a good signed book for a gift.
I think
Kwanzaa, Christmas, all of them.
I think what you need to do for Valentine's Day is you need to set up a kissing booth somewhere, but only white guys, just to, you know, reinforce the
– It has to be interracial.
It has to be interracial, yeah.
You know, that's kind of cute.
That's a freebie. You can have that.
Thank you.
Well, Rolanda, it was a pleasure to speak to you, get to know you. I'm enjoying the book, and thank you so much for joining us in Mr. Media today.
And listen, I had a ball with you, Mr. Media, and anytime you have me back, I love it. Thank you so very, very much. I appreciate it.
Is recorded live before a studio audience full of white Southern sheriffs whose first thought upon encountering a beautiful African-American woman on the beach these days may not always be the prospect of an illicit affair, unfortunately. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
My dog is here. Langston, you need to stay down.
Langston. I like that.
Langston, as in Langston Hughes.
Yep. I got the reference. I get it. I'm good.
Hi, this is Rich Scheidner. If you've ever wondered what it was like to be a stand-up comedian in the 1980s, I'm going to do you a big favor. Instead of billions of dollars for a time machine, you can just spend $24.95 and buy my new book, Kicking Through the Ashes, My Life as a Stand-Up in the 1980s Comedy Boom. It will save you money and give you thrills. It will take you there. Go to my website, richscheidner.com. Go to amazon.com and buy this book.
Okay, before you go, I just want to remind you that audible.com was our sponsor today, and you can get a free audiobook, with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow. TRYNOW. Again, a free audiobook with a 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audible.com/trynow. I don't know about you, but that Johnny Cash biography, as read by Kris Kristofferson, I think I'm going to grab that one right now.